Eric, thank you for the invitation to come. I have three talks because they are three different topics, all of them related to how to face the process, the problems of land degradation. All of the three are in from east Spain. Then this is the Mediterranean climate. For you, it's like California. Then I would tell, because we're three talks and we're coming from a different continent, I was trying to give a short introduction about the methods and that we are applying, and also how is the agricultural land there. Okay, this is a very old graph from Professor Schum, who studied geomorphological processes in general, and he found when he was plotting information for all over the world that the soil erosion take place mainly when you have a low rainfall amount, no when you have high amounts of rainfall. Because when you have a lot of rainfall, you have a lot of vegetation, and vegetation reduces the soil erosion. Also, you don't have erosion when you have a low amount of rainfall, like in a desert, because there is no enough rainfall. Then he found that between 200 and 600 millimeters of rain per year is when you found the areas in the world that they have more erosion. Well, he also found that there was, this is my research, but they also found here in the United States in the 20s that the pyrite material is very important. And here you can see the pyrite material for the different pyrite materials with different vegetation cover. And this is the area where I work in Spain. You can see that it's moving from 800 millimeters of rainfall to 200 millimeters, which is exactly the area that Schum said this is the place in the world that you will have more problems with high erosion rates. Then we have these problems in Spain, especially because these environmental conditions. This is the amount of days of rainfall. It is moving from 140 in the north, but 50% of the country have less than 60 days of rainfall, which is effective rainfall is only 20 days. In fact, in the south we have an area that is considered a desert. And then also what we found is a very old colonization or the use by the humankind of the land. And this is related, like Godir showing in the 90s, is the key question to understand the soil erosion. Then we have an area that is prone to have soil, high erosion rates, plus the impact of the humankind there for millennia, both of them. This is an area in Andean Spain. It's grazing, agriculture, and fire are the main drivers of the process of soil erosion. I will not talk here about fire, even that is one of my favorite topics. And then this is an example. This is Volubilis. It's in Morocco. It's a Roman city. 40,000 people living in a valley that now is almost nobody living there. This means that the impact of the humans in the land is millennia old. And always in our studies, this idea in the back is the process of soil degradation or desertification, which you, because grazing, fire, agriculture, mining, then you degrade the soils. Mainly we see the degradation of the vegetation, but below is the soil that is lose the quality and lose the infiltration capacity, increase the soil erosion rate, and so on. Well, it's very easy, no? We lose the vegetation, then we have more erosion, and we have this soil is lost. This is the idea we have in all of our studies. But I want to highlight here one topic, which is that during the last 50 years, the rural areas in Spain, like in many Mediterranean areas, they lost population. And less population, for example, the Pyrenees, they moved from 20 inhabitants per square kilometer to 2 inhabitants per square kilometer. Then it's less population, and then we are coming back to this. Abandoned land, abandoned towns, a vegetation recovery. This is an alluvial fund that in the 60s was completely bare of vegetation, and now it's colonized by vegetation. We have, in fact, we found in the north of Spain, in the Pyrenees, less runoff discharge. There are less runoff now than 60 years ago, but the quality of the water is much higher. Then this means that vegetation is used the water, and then the evapotranspiration is higher. We also have seen this, because there is not sediments coming from the slopes in some of the areas abandoned. The incision in the rivers is very active, and some of the foundation of the bridges are now in danger. Okay, methods. We started to use very simple methods, very cheap methods, like erosion pins, or we were doing topographical measurements. This is 30 years ago. These measurements we moved to plots, small plots, to distinguish the effect of different kinds of plants. Silt fences also, small silt fences, or big ones like these ones. But we are using a lot of rainfall simulators, different sizes, different types of rainfall simulators. Oh, this is, if it's working, I don't know if it will work, I did not check it here, I will check it yesterday. This is, we have the mouse, because this is a video. This is a video, it's a small video, but if you click in the let's see. Yeah, but it looks like that is okay. Then this is one a small rainfall simulator we use. That is mainly used to measure the infiltration rates in a small surface. Now we need to pass to the next one. Okay. But we also use bigger rainfall simulators like these ones. This is for 12 square meters floats. But the rainfall simulator can weigh even 40 centimeters. 40 square meters. The plot is 12 square meters. And also we use natural rainfall to measure erosion, which are very interested. We have different type of plots with different managements. But in each plot we have different sizes of the plots, because we know that the soil erosion is a scale dependent process. It depends on the length of the plot, on the size of the plot, the soil erosion. Then what we found is that, for example, the connectivity in these plots that are where we use herbicides is very efficient. Then the plots can be connected. Especially the ones from 1 to 4 meters. These plots are 1, 2, 4, 16, and 48 square meters in size. But in some other plots where we have a vegetation cover, the erosion is mainly related to the few first centimeters from the plot. Okay? Then we are using also this small rainfall simulator to see the effect. For example, in this case, is the effect of the ash after the fire, different type of ash. The color of the ash is telling you which is the composition. And this after forest fires. How these small silt fences, very, very cheap, very easy to install. And also you can install the day after the fire, which is one of the problems we have when we want to install a water sheet. To monitor large areas, we need time, we need money, and this sometimes don't come the day after the fire. It takes time. But the few weeks after the fire is where we can see big changes in the soil. Well, and sometimes the equipment is very basic, not so expensive. But for example, these kind of measurements are having plots under different plants, and we found that different plants produce different amounts of runoff and different soil erosion rates. And it's mainly due to the water repellency, because there are plants that have some substances that results in water repellent layers and then more runoff. Oh, this is an example of water repellent repellency. Okay, let's go to. Well, agriculture produces beautiful landscapes, but also this, which are, in my opinion, also very beautiful, but they are the ones that produce high erosion rates. This is apricot. If you see, this is after a thunderstorm of 30 millimeters in 30 minutes. And this is because the soil is bare. Some of our research show that when you allow to have catch crops, mulches, the erosion rate is reduced in one order of magnitude, very fast. These are vineyards. Also, one of the problems is the use of heavy machinery in the fields. We do not treat the soils as we should do it. Most of the agriculture in Spain is treating the soils as a surface where to plant trees. Mainly trees in this area, which is the Mediterranean belt. And then after that, the erosion is very high. This is more simulator. We did experiments. We have done for 30 years experiments, and it's very clear that if you have a forest, you have some runoff. Sometimes this runoff is because the water repellency of the surface layers, but the erosion rate is very low. Then you have a fire, you have an increase in soil erosion and also in surface runoff. But if you plowed olive, you have the erosion is higher. If you use herbicides in oranges, it's even higher. And if you plow in vineyards, that they plow a lot in the vineyards, they don't want to one wheat, it's also very high. And sometimes in our government is worried about the effect of fire, but nobody say anything about the problem of agriculture. The high erosion rate is coming from agriculture. Okay, this is the research of 10 years. This is comprised in this graph. Then the three first plots, which have in fact each one of them is having four subplots, show that the herbicides are the problem. Because in Spain, especially in the Mediterranean belt of the Mediterranean, herbicides are used to clean the soil. You will see some pictures later on that they changed the tractor with the plow by the herbicide. They don't want to see any wheat. And in my opinion, this is a mistake, because with the herbicide you can control the weeds from one day to another. Okay, but they don't use in this way. Then the soils are clean of vegetation, are bare, completely bare. And then you have between 2 and even 6 tons per hectare of soil erosion. Then tillage is not the solution, because tillage still have some erosion, especially when you have a high intensity thunderstorm, is when the tillage induce a lot of erosion. Meanwhile, because the hardness of the soil, you have some infiltration and there is no run. And the mulches, cash crops, and abandonment is we can find as a solution. When you abandon the land, the vegetation is recovered, and then the erosion is reduced almost to zero. Then there is two messages here. One is we have a problem, but we have solutions. And then this is the problem. You can see even these rocks that are in fact the drip irrigation system. The drip irrigation system in olives in Andalusia, they are inside the soil, underneath, at 40 centimeters. They put the pipe and they cover the soil. But then you can have, after a big thunderstorm, this kind of gullies. And then all the work is damaged. This is plowing too. In vineyards, and you will see that these bare soils all around, especially this is a problem when the vines are still young, like this case is 1 year old. But even when they are quite old, like this one, which are 30 years old, you have the compaction of the pass of the tractors, of the heavy machinery, and then the soil is being degraded. My discussion with the farmers is that they used to tell me, well, we are farming here. In this case, they are farming there for at least 3,000 years, and 3 millennia plowing. And they say, well, it's sustainable because we are here. Sometimes we need to listen to them and to learn from them. But I'm sure that we can improve this, because it's not acceptable that after it's thunderstorm, 3, 4, 5 times per year, which is what I have measured with plots, in vineyards you have this amount of erosion, in which in some places you are having 30 tons per hectare in one thunderstorm. This is a clear... Well, we were working on this. Then how to solve this? The first option is to allow to grow wheat on the vineyards or on the olive plantations or the almond plantations. But the farmers, they don't like this. They want the soil clean, tidy. They want the crop and nothing else. And this is inherited. It's a cultural issue. Then the first, probably the first policy we need to apply is education. To tell them that they also are, they are not only farmers, they also are the guards of the landscape. And that if we lose the soil, we lose everything. Then what we have done is just try to introduce the use of straw mulch. For them, using a straw mulch is not is taking care of the land. If you allow to grow the weeds, it's not taking care of the land. Then we did some research. We did this paper is published in Earth Science Review. We did a review about the use of straw mulch to control soil erosion and reduce the runoff discharge. Well, we did. We found that in South America there are no research on that. But in the other way around, no tillage is very popular in South America. Then this means that they are using the straw in some way. Okay? But this is we were doing a scientific research based on published papers. And what we found is always there is a reduction when you apply straw mulch. Always there is a reduction. Sometimes it's very very efficient. In our cases, it's very efficient. And some others only 20% reduction, but which is very important. And then we did some experiments. We transported the straw balls. We applied it on the field. We also are doing this using cash crops. In this case, it's medicago, and Bithia sativa is oats and alfalfa. And then we were applying in this kind of soils. We have two strategies. One is was to build like a small barrier underneath the plant, which is giving also a good thermic condition. The problem is that the farmer told us that he doesn't like this in the spring, because then the temperature of the soil is not going up fast and it can damage the sprout of the vines. Then this was one strategy. Another was to spread the straw around the soil. And then we used this small rainfall simulator to measure the infiltration rates too and the runoff. And these are some of the results. To use rainfall simulators give you good information, because the rainfall intensity, the rainfall amount is the same. You compare paired plots and then you can say if you have this amount of straw, you have this reduction in soil erosion. Okay, very easy, because we have plots also. We run the plots for years, and then we need 10 years to say something with common sense. But the rainfall simulator is giving us also information about how much we can apply. We don't need to apply too much. When you have 25% of cover of straw mulch, you reduce the erosion rates in 70%. Then if you increase the amount of straw, you reduce more the erosion, but it's not so efficient. Then 25%, 30% of straw cover is enough to control the process. And you can see that there is a reduction in the sediment concentration of in the runoff. Then suddenly you reduce, because the amount of sediments that is detached is reduced by 5 times, you reduce the amount of erosion, but also you increase the infiltration and reduce the runoff. And then this is the runoff coefficient, that is slightly reduced, and it's related to the amount of cover. And this is, I need a little bit more explanation. When we use the rainfall simulators, because we take the advantage that we always apply the same amount of rainfall in each reserve, we can measure when is the time that the soil is ponded. This means when the soil can infiltrate the water, the rainfall, and you have at the beginning shining in the surface, and then at the end you have some ponds. And then we measure the time that we need for that. And then we also measure the time that the runoff starts in the plot, inside the plot, and when the runoff starts in the outlet of the plot. Then this is giving you an idea of the connectivity. And then what we found is that the connectivity is reduced when you increase the amount of straw. And then you can see this, that when you increase the amount of straw, which is in the y-axis, you have a reduction an increase in the time, which is a reduction in the connectivity. Then when you apply a straw, the ponding starts later because you don't have the drop impact on the soil. The runoff starts later, and the runoff outlet starts later. Then you have less less runoff in general. Okay, this is the three key parameters we measured that we did not pay. For many years we were taking this information and we did not use it, and now we are more and more in favor to use it. Well, this is a graphical abstract. Then if you have a straw in the between the lines, you reduce the detachment and you reduce the surface runoff. The detachment is reduced in 70, almost 80%, and the surface runoff in 25%. Is straw, this is the good news, straw is very efficient to control the soil erosion. There is an impact on the runoff, but it's not so important because it's just we apply the straw now and we make the experiment in 5 minutes later. And now we are making measurements in areas that we apply it straw for years. And then now we found that there is an improvement in the soil. The porosity is lower and then we have more infiltration. But this will be another year. When I will come back next year to the meeting, we will talk about that. These are some of the small plots we are using. They are 2x2. We have always 4 plots to see the spatial variability. And then when we apply the straw, this is the highest amount of straw applied. Okay? This is around 0.5 kilo of straw per square meter, which is a lot. If you use 25 grains, you start to have per square meter. 25 grains per square meter is very little, but this is very efficient. But we are measuring how much is the or which is the cover we need, and to be efficient. Okay, this is traditional landscape from the Mediterranean, a rhine-fed agriculture in olive plantation. You see, you can see all the terraces there that are protecting the soil from soil erosion. These are millennia old. In fact, in this area there was a tree that was 300 years old in one of the terraces, which means that the system was very stable. I come back to this because you can see this small valley here, because now we during the last 10 years we have an intensification of the agriculture. In some parts of the country we are abandoning the agriculture, and in some others we are making an intensification of the agriculture. Orange plantations, and I think this is not different in California, for example, and in many other parts of this country. Then the intensification means that rainfed agriculture is not anymore profitable, and then we need to go to drip irrigation, and then we transfer the land, like you can see here. We remove the soil. You can see the tractors are, some of them are 5 meters tall, some of them. Then it's a huge amount. And then this is the plantations afterwards. The new agriculture, based on the knowledge of doctors, agronomists, in Spain results on this. In this area, I measured one in October 2008, and October 2007, it was twice in 2 years, one day with 178 and 181 millimeters in one day. But 50% of the rainfall arrived in 5 hours in the evening. Then in this area, I measured 50 tons of per hectare per day in one day, which is unbelievable. And you know, before on these kind of plantations, what we had is a rainfed agriculture with terraces that were sustainable, were used for millennia in the Mediterranean to crop olives. This is clear, the amount of sediments, because we had in some places 50 centimeters. In this case, I arrived just 1 hour after the thunderstorm, then you still can see some of the ponds. And it's also the damage in the infrastructure, the roads completely destroyed. And still we are working like that. If you can see in this, you can distinguish that in the past there were terraces with walls, and now they destroy this because they want to mechanize everything that will be tractors moving around. Then it's a pure chemical agriculture. So some of our solution is to use, again, this example is to use a straw to chip the branches, because in the past the farmers, they used to burn the branches, to take out of the field and burn the branches, to clean everything. Even they used to take off the leaves from the soil, the litter, and burn, because they were trying to have a clean soil. Then these are some of the profiles that we are... you can see two profiles with fresh straw, and two profiles with six-month-old straw. And then these are some data that show... We have 10 experiments, again with rainfall simulations, and you see that when you increase the amount of straw, you reduce always the sediment concentration, then the erodibility is going down, the runoff coefficients, the amount of... But if you see, runoff still exists, after even though you apply the straw, still exists the runoff. Meanwhile, the sediments are well controlled. And this is final soil erosion. Okay, this is in grains per square meter per hour. Okay, some graphs that show this better. If you have, this is in Vallada, in this area that you show these beautiful red soils. Then if you have the soil bare, you have runoff coefficient that are around 20%, and you have around 6, 7, 8 tons per hectare in 1 hour of rainfall. This rainfall that we used was 55 millimeters hour, which is, there is a 5 years return period. It means that we will have this every 5 years. And then, but if you apply a straw, you suddenly you reduce the runoff coefficient and you reduce the infiltration, the erosion rate. And this is another study area, which is called Montesa. And this this is probably because the soil were different. The runoff coefficient did not change. It was a marly soil, a marl soil, and the infiltration did not change. The runoff was still high, but the sediment concentration was lower and the erosion was much lower. And this is another one in which we are. This is Montesa again, but we compare the vegetation cover and the soil erosion. Then, as soon you put something on the top of the soil, you put a straw or you put chipped branches, then you have this. And one idea more that is, I think, is in my opinion is brilliant, but it's not mine. It's from the farmers. Is they use rock fragments. For many years, we developed tools to remove the rock fragments from the soil, take it out. In Spain, if you visit central Spain, you will see big mountains of stones that the farmers they take out from the. Sometimes it's the petrocalcic, but sometimes it's just any rock fragment, any stone that you will find in the field. And what we found is that if you have stones, rock fragments, then you reduce the amount of soil erosion. Okay, now we are moving more to see how the soil is changing with different managements. And what we are doing is measuring the soil biota, which is not easy, because in the Mediterranean, because the summer drought for 3 months, we have no rain and high temperatures, sometimes 40. In this area, we had last year one day of 46, for example, and no rainfall for 3 months. Then finally, what we have is that some periods of the year you don't see too much biological activity. And then in the other part of the year it's quite cold, and then it's not the best climate for the life. Then we were doing this, taking the soil 20 by 20 by 20 centimeters in volume, and then taking out and reviewing what was inside. Okay, then she's Elena, she's from Prague. And she's expert on earthworms. And then we did in different crops, and also in forest land. This is the different soils that we were measuring. These are vineyards. We also, in this place, we used to make measurements of the soil physics. This is infiltration with the Rinke infiltrometer. Here's Simone. And these are some of the results, okay? This is the amount of endogenic earthworms. This is the amount of epigenic earthworms. And here is, just to, if you know this, we have four main different type of earthworms. We only found two of them, the Pijaica and the Endogeica. We don't have an Essica, even that I think there are, but only they show visually when it's very warm and wet. If not, they are too deep and we cannot find it. And the cosmopod earthworms, they are not, because our soils, they have usually they have 1% organic matter. Then the compost earthworms, they have not the conditions to be there. Then we also measure the arthropods in different fields. We are checking the effect of stromals, of chipped branches, and then this brings us to study the effect of organic farming. And then we are also comparing organic against chemical or conventional, we can say, and also between flat irrigation against drip irrigation or no irrigation, rainfed, to see the effects. This is an example of the oranges, for example. These are the example of olives. To the right, you can see in these pictures, to the right is the organic farms, and to the left is the plowed, is a chemical farm. And then this is what we are doing. It's a take out of time to do the measurements. Some of the results that we found, but I go to tell you very fast in a couple of sentences what we found. This is a preliminary data with the number of earthworms, and what we found is that if you have organic farming, the earthworms are very happy. They increase a lot, very fast, which is a good news, because our soils, they have been plowed for millennia, but they also has been affected by the use of chemicals, herbicides, and chemical farming for at least 50 years. Then sometimes you see the soil and you think it's almost dead, because it's sometimes you see that you think that they are plowing the rock after so many years. But once you apply good management, the life is coming back. And then the macroarthropods is also is organic farming, and like with the springtails and midges, what we found is that moisture is the key issue. Then in the drip irrigation, you will find a lot of life in the area where you have the drip. But we have also in Spain, we still have 50% in the area where we are working, 50% is flat irrigation. And in flat irrigation, it's even better. Then probably because we moist all the soil, all the area, and in the drip irrigation, we only moist 10 to 20% of the soil. And both earthworms and anthropods, they love organic farming. Okay, this is the end, but one of the problems for me as a soil scientist or environmentalist, sometimes you don't know where you are, is that the most successful agriculture in Spain, and probably in the United States something similar, is the one that is being developed in the southeast in greenhouses. 30 years ago was a desert with almost no agriculture, being abandoned by people moving to north of Europe to work. And suddenly the economy of the greenhouses changes the fate of this area of Spain. And this area, which is Almeria, is plenty of greenhouses and is the garden of Europe. It's bringing fresh vegetables for all over Europe. I suppose that New Mexico or Arizona is doing something similar to the rest of the United States. But the problem is that they don't use the soil. The soil is covered with concrete. And this is something that the soil scientists, we need to change. Because if the agriculture is moving to a system to produce food based on chemicals, like you can see here these tomatoes, I think it would be a big problem for the sustainability. Okay. Thanks. Just I tried to condense the three talks I had in one to have that you will understand the whole approach we are having. And now, time for questions.
Questions for Jim? I was wondering
Well, with the with the farmers, especially with the farmers in Spain, that they want, it's like if they will have a competition to between them to show who is the best farmer. And the best farmer is the one that has the clean surface, the plowed surface of the soil and so on. Then, if you want to measure gully erosion, you need to be very fast. Because the day after, if the tractors can drive on the field, they will plow. They don't want that anybody else will see that they have the gullies. In fact, in the last measurements I did in June 2015, I requested from the farmer to give me 15 days. And he told me that he's a large property. He told me, well, this depends on the worker. If the worker who is driving the tractor allows you to do it, it's okay. If not, it's not. Also, they are right that if you keep the gullies and there is a second thunderstorm 3 days later, then the damage can be worse. And then what they try is to remove everything and then don't show the gullies. This is because sometimes we see the landscape in the Mediterranean and it looks so beautiful. But when you go after the day after of the 10-year return period thunderstorm, it's not like that. You see some terraces that collapse, you see gullies, and obviously in the road you see a lot of sediments moving. But it's possible to measure, eh? It's not a problem. And we have seen that when there are gullies, you jump in 1 order, 2 orders of magnitude in soil erosion, suddenly, because the process is more efficient. Yeah, we are promoting a lot the use of catch crops or weeds in the interrow that will not damage the production, because the farmers, in one way, they want to have the soil clean, and also they say that if you have catch crops or weeds, they use the water that is for the crop, and in these areas that we have 300, 400 millimeters of rainfall. These wines, they produce the grapes during summer with no one drop of rain. It depends on the water that is in the soil from the spring. Can damage the production. But in general, it's a question of a cultural question. They were educated to have the soil clean, and we are trying to demonstrate them, like with this picture I show you with an organic farmer, that he is producing less grapes but better paid, because it's organic farming. And then also with the farmers, you can win the battle if you put the economical issue in front and you demonstrate them that they can get a better income. But this is related to subsidies. And in Europe, subsidies are changing and are not very stable. Then some farmers, they start with a subsidy, which is profitable, and suddenly 10 years later, it's not anymore this subsidy. Then this should be is a political issue. The policy should focus on that, to protect the farmer in this way. That if you have an agreement, you need to protect them with this agreement. And in general, the new farmers, the young farmers, they are very positive. Is it the time? The young farmers, they are very positive with organic farming. They were educated in a different way. But the problem is that we have 80% of our farmers are older than 55. There is not a renewal in the properties. Most of the farmers, they keep going as a farmer until the age of 80. They are retired for 50 years, for 15 years, and they are still working as a farmer, because the son of the family is not going to take this, or at least in this moment is not going to take. Then we have a problem with the replacement of the farmers. And it's moving the economy, the agriculture, is moving to big properties, big companies, based on agrochemicals. Then we don't have I think, a solution to find a sustainable agriculture in this way. And it's a social issue, more than a technical issue. Then we know how to reduce the soil erosion. Very easy. We developed it in the last 30, 40 years, and other strategies. But the question is how this can be applied and how the farmers can take advantage of them, of this new technology. Some researchers, they did a calculation about the cost of this degradation. And there are many. It's not only soil erosion. It's also pollution of the aquifer. Depletion of the aquifers. Because we are using drip irrigation in areas that were rain-fed. Then we have, in the coast of the Mediterranean, all of our aquifers are polluted with nitrogen. With nitrate, and also most of them are depleted, and some of the springs are reduced. But we need to change the policies on that, because there is no control about how much nitrogen you can use. Nobody controls the farmers. There are recommendations, but one farmer can multiply by 10, want to multiply by 10 the amount of nitrogen used. This is business. Then. I think that there are many things that we need to change from the environmental issues in agriculture. We are still focused in production. Only few farmers start to think that more production is not beneficial. It's better quality what we need to find. We will be talking about Africa. My work will be completely different. But in Europe, and I think in the United States, it's the other way around. Most of the crops that I show you, sometimes they don't collect 30-40% of the production. There are years with overproduction of oranges, and 30% is not collected. The fields that are collected, 30% is not collected because it's too small or too big, or it's not spherical. And then when this product reaches the cooperative or the private company that process the fruits and select the fruits, again, you have 30%, 40%, 50% that is removed because it's not of the enough quality. It's for juice. But then this means that we are in a luxurious society that only selects the best fruit and the other is not used. But the nutrition is exactly the same in one fruit and another. Then there are many things that we need to change in this way. In Spain, for example, I give you an example of the wine. We produce around 20, 25, some years, 50%. More grapes than we need for wine production. And then once we transform it in wine, we transform around 25% with subsidies from the government into alcohol. We produce wine, which is very expensive, to transform into alcohol instead to use sugar beet. In the ones that love wine, this year was a very good year for production in La Rioja. Somebody knows which is the wines of La Rioja. One is the most popular in Spain, the most prestigious ones. And they have a control about the amount of grapes the farmers can produce. Then this year there are fields with 50% of the grapes on the floor. Cut it, threw it on the floor, and plowed to reduce the production. And all this has been produced with plowing, with chemicals, fertilizers, but also pesticides. Then I think we need an agriculture that will be more sustainable and need to be with more planning behind. Okay, I think I took too much time.
No, we're fine for time, but we are out for time. So I thank you, Artemi.
Thank you.